Morning. Today's Daf and Krisus is Yud Aleph. We are behind. We're on Yud Amud Aleph. We are in the middle of a difficult sugya. Let us navigate through the sugya. The woman who has given birth to a child brings a series of karbanos after having a count. The count goes by the name of Melos. It's based on the Pasuk. And after the count, she brings karbanos. We are dealing with a Mishnah that gives a scenario in which she gave birth to a female, and then she had subsequent miscarriages. The reason why we're describing miscarriages as opposed to just a regular birth is because we are going to have her miscarriages during the count. And basically what we're trying to ascertain is what exactly is going to be the status of having a miscarriage, which also requires a count and karbanos, if she has it while counting from a previous birth. Obviously, if it was a full-term delivery, so then it's going to be well past the malos. The malos, the count of a woman after having given birth, is going to be 40 or 80 days. 40 days after having a boy, 80 days after having a girl. So what happens now if she has a miscarriage in the middle of the malos, or what if there's some overlap? So that's the discussion that we're having. The Mishnah brought down a machlokes between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda. Chacham's position is very straightforward. In fact, it's so straightforward, it doesn't really require much discussion. And the Gemara does not discuss the opinion of the Chachamim much. And it's really simple according to the Chachamim. If a woman miscarried while in the middle of a count, so what's going to happen now is that it's always going to follow the most recent birthing event. So if she had a miscarriage while counting, so what it's going to do is just upend the previous count, and she's going to count anew, and a series of karbanos for the most recent one. And she's not going to bring a karbanos for the previous one. That's the opinion of the Chachamim. So in the scenario the Mishnah drew up, where she had a girl, which was an 80-day malos. And then after having a girl, she has a miscarriage within the 80-day count. Then she has another miscarriage. So there were three birthing events. The first one was a healthy girl, and the next two were miscarriages. Either way, according to the Chachamim, you're always going to be following the most recent in terms of establishing the count, in terms of bringing karbanos. That's the opinion of the Chachamim, and that's straightforward. Didn't require discussion, doesn't require discussion.
She has a girl for 80
days. Hmm?
She has a baby. Does she have a girl?
In terms of relationship with her husband, so according to the Torah, it's divided to 14 and 66. 14 days, the dam that comes out is dam tameh. The 66 days subsequent, the dam that comes out is dam tahor. But that's only relative to her husband. In terms of her ability to go into the Beis HaMikdash, she is precluded from the Beis HaMikdash until she finishes her count. And then the following day, she's going to bring her karbanos, her mechusrei kapara karbanos. So it's different between her, a relationship between her and her husband, and her ability to go into the Beis HaMikdash. The position of Rabbi Huda, however, is complicated. And the position of Rabbi Huda is as follows. So, and we were introduced to it already back in the Mishnah. If a woman has a birthing event in her malos, so vis-a-vis karban, it's totally discounted. It's totally negated. Meaning to say as follows. A woman gave birth to a girl. She now is in an 80-day count of her malos. Under those circumstances, if let's say she both conceived and miscarried within those 80 days, now it's possible. It's possible this to happen because she's going to be with her husband 2 weeks postpartum. She could, in theory, conceive at that point in time. If the conception now, if the gestated baby is 40 days old, so that now where she miscarries is a birthing event. So we're you do the numbers, it's now 14 days plus, let's say she conceived on day 15 because she was with her husband, and then 40 days later, so we're 55. So we're at 55 postpartum. It's possible for her to have a birthing event, which would then require a new count and karbanos. According to the Chachamim, new count and karbanos. But according to Rav Yehuda, because this birthing event occurred during the malos of the previous one, so vis-a-vis karbanos, it's totally discounted. It's disregarded. She's not going to be bringing a karban for this because she's already on the hook to bring a karban for her previous one. If let's say she has another birthing event, which would be post the count of her first birthing event, so then she would have to count and bring karbanos for that one. So according to Rav Yehuda, that means if she had three consecutive birthing events. First one was a girl, second one was a miscarriage, 55 days later, third one was a miscarriage, 55 days later. So according to Rav Yehuda, karbanos in counting for the first, karbanos in counting for the third, no karbanos for the second. That's the opinion of Rav Yehuda as presented in the Mishnah. Okay. Where does it get complicated? Right about now. According to Rav Yehuda, now we know what his position is regarding the karbanos. Is he going to maintain the same thing regarding counting as well? For Rav Yehuda, who says that we discount karbanos, are we also discounting counting? I didn't mean to be that, you know, that kind of alliteration, but I really liked it. are we going to discount the counting as well, according to Rav Yehuda? That's the question on the table. The Gemara now is discussing this very question. And basically what's on the table as follows. Maybe for Rav Yehuda, the only thing that's disregarded for her second birthing event is only going to be karban, because that's what the Mishnah said. And we had a drasha at the beginning of the sugya. But maybe vis-a-vis counting, maybe her second birthing event would result in counting. Now, how would the counting exactly go? So it's complicated. And like I said yesterday, and I'm repeating today, it does get complicated. Meaning, according to Rav Yehuda, here's how it would look. talk about complication. She had a girl. She's now on the 80-day count of her malos. Now, let's say 55 days later, she had a birthing event, right? She was pregnant on day 15. She miscarried on day 40. So 55 days later, she had a birthing event. Now, for Rav Yehuda, no karbanos. That part's clear. But maybe what the Gemara is entertaining now is that she's going to count. How would she count? Well, we'll start like this. On day 55, now that she had a miscarriage, so she is going to observe her 2 weeks of Yomei Tumah. The Gemara feels that is something which it cannot delay, postpone. That has to be counted immediately. Okay? So in other words, so she's going to be counting her 2 weeks of Yomei Tumah. But remember now, she's on day 55, so 2 weeks of Tumah, so that'll bring her to approximately day 70. Okay, I know I'm off a day, but the basic idea is still there. So she's now on day 70. She still has 10 days remaining from her first. So she'll just simply finish up those. And when I say finish up those, meaning because she was in postponement for 2 weeks because of her Yemei Tumah, so in other words, she's going to add those 2 weeks on, so it'll be 2 weeks of Yemei Tohar plus the balance of Yemei Tohar. Then, as if you weren't confused enough as it is, then what she'll do is because she'll count for the second birthing event, she still now has another 66 days of Yemei Tohar, and maybe that she'll observe now on the other side as well. So in other words, it'll be the balance of Yemei Tohar for the... I'll go in order in terms of from the first birthing event. First birthing event, she's counting her malos. Day 55, she has a miscarriage. She'll count now 15 days of Yemei Tumah, then followed by the balance of Yemei Tohar for number one, followed then by the Yemei Tohar number two. Another 66 days of Yemei Tohar. That is one possibility within Rav Yehuda. The other possibility, just like Rav Yehuda discounts and totally disregards her birthing event legabe karban, we're also going to disregard the birthing event legabe counting as well. Simple. Meaning for Rav Yehuda, if she has a birthing event while in her malos, it is totally discounted. That's the other possibility within Rav Yehuda, and the Gemara now is entertaining these two options in terms of the Shita of Rav Yehuda. After the Gemara now has presented the question, the Gemara now goes on to resolve it. I'm Rav Huna Misura Tashma. So we're picking up right where we left off yesterday in Yud Amud Aleph, and it is the last narrow line. The Gemara is going to try to deduce it from the following Braisa. Yoledes Shochtim V'Zorkin Aleh B'Yom Mem L'Zachar V'Yom Shmonim L'Kaiva. We have the following circumstance: a woman, after having given birth pretty recently, 40 days since a boy, 80 days since a girl. So now it comes out that day 40 and day 80 are respectively land right on Erev Pesach. On Erev Pesach, she obviously would like to bring the Karban Pesach, and she would like to eat the Karban Pesach. Problem is, of course, is that right now she is finishing up her malos. Until she concludes her malos, she can't go into the Beis HaMikdash area, and she can't eat karbanos. Now we've discussed this a number of different ways back in Pesachim, and here, and by the way, this is a Tosefton Pesachim we're learning right now, and this is just another example of, well, today she's not available, but tonight she will be. And so can somebody bring a carbon on her behalf, carbon Pesach on her behalf, or to put it simpler, let her register with a carbon Pesach, and even though right now she can't bring, but tonight she'll be available to bring. And so would that be an option? So the Braisa says, absolutely. That's exactly what the Tosefta is teaching us, that you can shecht and you can sprinkle the blood on her behalf, provided that it's either day 40 postpartum of a boy or 80 postpartum of a girl. That's the Braisa. To which the Gemara says, I'm trying to wrap my head around the Braisa, and I can't make heads and tails of it. Because Atkan Tamehi, what are you talking about? We've gone over this yesterday, and let's go over it again today. When a woman is postpartum, so what does she do? She counts for after a boy 40 days and after a girl 80 days. She's not done yet. Meaning on day 40, she'll tov in the mikvah. On day 80, she'll tov in the mikvah. She's still mechusrei kapara. She still has to bring a carbon the following day. On a postpartum of a boy, day 41, she's bringing a carbon. Postpartum of a girl, day 81, she's bringing a carbon. So if Erev Pesach lands on her 40th day after a boy, she can't eat carbon tonight. She can't eat carbon until the next day, which is the first day of Pesach, which is too late in terms of her ability to eat carbon Pesach. To which the Gemara now is saying is, this Tosefta literally makes no sense. If her 40th or 80th day, respectively, boy, girl, is coming out on Erev Pesach, even if you shecht on her behalf, she's not available tonight to eat carbon. It's difficult. So on a difficult Tosefta, the Gemara is going to give answers. Most of them are going to be difficult. Just challenging answers, complicated answers. First answer is the one provided by Rav Chista. Amar Rav Chista. Now, mind you, by the way, because we're going to lose the forest, and I'm going to try not to. The entire purpose of this exercise right now is to address the question of what is Rav Yehuda's position regarding not the karbanos, but of the counting for her birthing event in Amalos. That is the question on the table. And so the only reason why we're discussing this right now is because we want to see if we can gain clarity on the issue of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista Hamani Rabbi Yehuda Yidamar. So the author of this brisa that we just learned together regarding Karm Pesach is actually authored by Rabbi Yehuda. And Vlad Sheni Kamandale Sidami. Now we know the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda because that's what we're learning right now. And that is that the Vlad Sheni, the second fetus, the second child, is disregarded. Meaning, like we've been discussing, where you had a birthing event within a malos. Now, V'amar b'toma Sfira Leila Rav Yehuda, before I go further in the Gemara, let's fill in some more details. The Gemara over here is really, really, really scarce on the details. The details are coming via Rashi. I'm just going to say it outside. What happened is as follows. She had multiples. She gave birth to one today and the other one the next day, the following day. From the Gemara's perspective, it is possible for the multiples to come out staggered and not come out one immediately after the other. So she had one today and one the following day. Under those circumstances now, she basically is running a dual count, meaning she has 40 from her first child and 40 from her second, and they're separated by a day. So that means now that according to Rav Yehuda, what do we do about now the second birthing event? Now, a birthing event over here happens to have a viable child, but it doesn't matter. The point is that their second birthing event was within the first birthing event. I know it's only one day in, but still, it's within the first birthing event. And so what the Gemara now is projecting is the following. Since we're following the opinion of Rav Yehuda, so now follow down this somewhat complicated path. Erev Pesach for her is day 40, and it's also day 41. What? Because she had multiples a day apart from one another. So from her first birthing event, it's 41. From her second, it's 40. That's what the Bryce is making reference to. And since we're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda, so that means that the second birthing event is going to be disregarded. Now the Gemara says, now if you're following well, and hopefully I'm explaining it well, if you're following well now what's happening right now, since we've aligned this Bryce to go like Rav Yehuda, what do we say about the second birthing event? We say that it's totally disregarded. And that it was exactly our question. And now, based on everything we just put together, it sounds like it's totally disregarded. The Gemara says that if for Rav Yehuda, the second birthing event is only disregarded regarding carbon, but we're still going to be doing a count for the second birthing event, well, that's not going to work. Because if we're counting from the second birthing event, what is Erev Pesach for her? From the second, it's day 40. It's no good because she still cannot eat carbon that evening. So the Gemara says, based on this brisa and based on our analysis that this brisa is going like Rav Yehuda, so what we have just discovered is that according to Rav Yehuda, a birthing event that occurs within her count is totally disregarded for carbon and for counting as well. Okay, that's what it sounds like. The Gemara deflects. La'olam eim l'chalotum l'taros v'yol el Rav Yehuda v'lad sheni kamandi isei dami. The Gemara now is suggesting that maybe no, maybe it is in fact considered. We do regard the second birth vis-a-vis your count according to Rav Yehuda. V'chitanya hahi bePesach haba b'tumah. So the Gemara is suggesting now that maybe what we're describing right now is that it is a specific year, specifically a Karban Pesach that's brought in a state of tumah. The majority of the Jewish people are tameh, and this year Karban Pesach is brought b'tumah. So the Gemara is suggesting now that because it's brought b'tumah, even though she still has to count not only for her first but for her second as well, she's going to be able to eat Karban Pesach that night because everyone's eating in a state of tumah. To which the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Pesach b'tuma, you remember the rules? The Gemara reminds us. Umi achla v'atanan, Pesach haba b'tuma, in a year where the majority of the Jewish people are tummy, and we're all going to be eating Karban Pesach in a state of tuma, lo yochlu mimenu zavim v'zavos, nida v'yoldos. Not everybody who's tummy is allowed to eat the Karban Pesach. In fact, only those who are tummy meis. Those who have tuma hayotze migufo, tuma that is generated from one's own body, notably, the Zav, Zava, Nida, and Yoledes, so they're not allowed to eat Karban Pesach, even though a Tameh Meis is allowed to eat Karban Pesach. Now, the reason for this distinction, it's based on Psukim and Drashas. See Rashi over here, who gives us some of the Drashas. But anyway, the Gemara is basically saying, this solution doesn't work. Because even if it is a year in which Karban Pesach is brought to Tumah, nevertheless, that's not going to help our Yoledes. She cannot partake. So the Gemara says, Hayilo Achli Kilo Tfilin. So the Gemara is suggesting, well, remember, in terms of a Yoledes, she can't eat Karban Pesach, even Pesach HaBra B'tumah, because she's a Yoledes. The Gemara now is suggesting, well, she did Tovel in the Mikvah. Remember, after a boy, so after 7 days of Yemei Tumah, she Tovels in the Mikvah. From day 7 to day 33, from day 7 to day 40, the next 33 days, she is what is called a Tvul Yom. It's a Tvul Yom Arichta. It's a long Tvul Yom, but she's considered Tvul Yom. The Gemara now is proposing, I know that a Yoledes can't eat Karban Pesach, even if it's Pesach HaBa B'tumah. But maybe Tvul Yom is different. Because remember, Tvul Yom, it removes some of the Tumah. And what the Gemara now is suggesting and entertaining is that because she toveled in the Mikvah, so therefore, she is not a Yoledes, but a Tvul Yom of a Yoledes, which is less. So the Gemara says, and not only that, day 40 is not a significant number. It's really day 8, because she's toveling in the mikvah on day 8, not day 40. So the Gemara is suggesting, well, all right. So let's go about this in a different avenue. Let's say that day 40 is a significant day. Why? Because on the nightfall after day 40, on the eve of day 41, she's no longer even a Tvul Yom. She's now what is called, put into the category of Mechusar Kapara. And again, as stages go, her Tumah has been relieved even a little bit more. I'll put this in real terms so that hopefully it makes somewhat more sense. A person whose Tumah can't eat anything that's Kadosh, period. If, let's say, you Tovel on the Mikvah and you're now a Tvul Yom, so now you're allowed to eat Maaser Sheni. After Harav Shemesh, after the sun sets, now you're allowed to eat Truma. You can't eat Karban until the following day when you bring your Karbanos from Mechusar Kapara. So you see that with every step now that she's closer to full Tahara, it actually advances her state of Tahara. What the Gemara now is proposing is that, look, it's true that it's day 40 for her, but tonight she'll no longer be a Tvul Yom. Tonight she'll only be a Mechusar Kapara, and the Gemara is suggesting that's why she can eat Karban Pesach. Ula Rava de Amar Mechusar Kaparam Dezav Kizav Dami Hamasis Eichem Taritzla. So the Gemara says, yeah, but not everyone subscribes to that idea. Notably, Rava. Rava says that the Mechusar Kapara of a Zav has the status of a Zav. In our scenario, the Mechusar Kapara of a Yoledes has the status of a Yoledes. And so therefore, we have not advanced the discussion. We don't gain in this answer, or put it simpler, the answer doesn't work. So the Gemara says, Am Ravashi Rava Mitarsla Biyom Mem Litzir Zachar of Yom Shmina Litzir Nekeva. So the Gemara says, as far as Rava is concerned, this brisa that we just learned has nothing to do with having given birth to a either male or female, but rather we're talking about a miscarriage of a male or female. Now, I know it sounds very similar what I just said, but the Gemara is suggesting the following, a totally new pshat in the Braisa. The Braisa says 40 for a boy, 80 for a girl. It doesn't mean 40 and 80 postpartum. It means development in utero, the gestation. What we're saying is as follows. Now, generally speaking, what do we normally think when we talk about gestation? If the gestation only lasted 40 days, so then what comes out of her is maya ba'alma. It is not a fetus. It is not a birthing event. After 40 days, it's now a birthing event. However, and we generally do not discriminate between whether what was gestating inside of her was a male or a female. There is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says that the gestation period in utero is going to differentiate between a boy and a girl. If what is developing inside of her is a male, so then it's considered a vlad or at day 40. If what's developing inside of her is a female, so then it only is going to have halachic status from day 80 and onward post-conception. What the Gemara now is saying is that the 40 and 80 over here is not talking about postpartum, but rather development in utero. And that means that if she discharged what was developing inside of her and it was a male and it was within 40 days, so then it's disregarded because that was not a birthing event. If, however, what was developing inside of her was a female and she discharged it any time within 80 days, that's not a birthing event. That's what the Braisa means, and it has nothing to do with her count and her malos. Okay, once we're saying all this, so then basically what we did with the Braisa, we basically put the Braisa aside. It is not at all associated with our discussion. And the Gemara just simply points out the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, he da'amar lezachar mem ve'echad l'nekev shmonim ve'echad. So, sof, typically, detmeahi, mishum nida. The Gemara says, okay, but I'm still all a little bit confused. So, she gave birth to a non-viable fetus on Erev Pesach. And again, it was a male and it came out prior to day, it came up from day 40 or earlier. Or it was a female and came out from day 80 or earlier. The Gemara says, okay, but when she gave birth, there's also blood that came out. She won't be able to come Pesach tonight. She's a nida. So the Gemara says, Beleda Yavishta. So the Gemara gives an Ukimta, where the only thing that came out was only the discharged fetus or the discharged developing embryo, and there was no blood that came out. So we have Chimala Memra, Maud Detema, Yevshal Psicha, Sekever Below Dam, Kamash Milan, Yevshal Psicha, Sekever Below Dam. And this takes us to a debate that we're going to see a number of times in Masechta Nida. Can the uterus open up, and can there be no blood coming out of an open uterus? Meaning, obviously, in the birthing process, her uterus opened up. And even though this is not a birth, it's a discharge, but nevertheless, her uterus opened up. So is it possible for the uterus to open up and blood not come out? It's debatable, and the Gemara is suggesting that our Bryce is teaching us that it's possible. It remains within the realm of possibility. Okay, that was a long exercise in trying to ascertain whether Rav Yehuda, who disregards the karbanos of a birthing event in a malos, is he also going to be disregarding the count? From the Braisa that we just learned, the Tosefta Psachim, we come out inconclusive. I know, that was a long way to get to nowhere. But that's not true, it's not nowhere. We reviewed all the halachas regarding Karban Pesach, we reviewed Tumah B'Pesach, meaning there was a lot of things that we needed to know in order to, even though we were unsuccessful in arriving at a conclusion, but still a lot of really good points and a lot of review coming out of that. Anyway,
I thought we learned that regardless whether there's blood or no blood,
she is tummy only if it is a fetus. If the development was anything less than 40 days, it's maya ba'alma. It's not a birth.
But if she's bleeding, then...
If she's bleeding, then she's a nida. Okay. I'm Rabbi Shmaya Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay, we have now another braisa. Shishim, now the pasuk shishim yom, that is a description of a woman after having given birth to a girl. So it's shishim yom v'sheshet yamim. It is 60 days and 6 days, otherwise known as 66. But the Gemara now is focusing on the number 60. Yachol bein ritzufim bein mefuzarim. 60 days, are they counted all consecutively? Maybe they can count, be counted with a break in the middle. Tamar lomar, yom. By the pasuk using the word yom, so ma yom ratzuf, af shishim kulam ritzufim. Now 1 day is always going to be counted consecutively because it's just simply the nature of counting 1 day. You can't divide a day. It's a unit. The 60 also is going to be viewed in the same manner. It's a unit, and therefore it cannot be divided. Now, who's dividing that 60? Money. Now, according to the Chachamim, there is no such thing as Mefuzarim. We're never breaking anything up. Because remember, according to the Chachamim, as I pointed out, we discuss very little because it's pretty straightforward according to the Chachamim. And here too, there's not much to discuss. She gave birth already, she's in her Malo, she's in her count. And now she has another birthing event. What happens according to the Chachamim? Everything previously erased. New count, new carbon, done. So according to the Chachamim, you're not breaking anything up because once you have a birthing event within a malos, so everything in the past now is erased, and now we go from this point going forward. So there is no break in the action, if anything, meaning we don't stagger the count, we just simply dismiss the count and we count anew. So for the Chachamim, there's never a situation where we're going to stop counting and restart counting. Oh, okay, fine. Elalav Rav Yehuda, so it must be Rav Yehuda. Umidikar Yair Leishishim Ritzufim Behadei Adad Dishma Mina Chuma Islay LeRav Yehuda Kula Leislay. Now, if this brace is authored by Rav Yehuda, so that means as follows. So for Rav Yehuda, again, we know this definitively. If a birthing event occurs during the Malos, the Karbanos are discounted. The brace also just taught us that the 60 days are counted consecutively, which means that nothing's going to interrupt that count. Oh, so that means that this brisa, which is going like Rav Yehuda, has just taught us that for Rav Yehuda, we are not factoring in the count at all of her second birthing event. Oh, okay, good. So, and that would seem to conclude that, or conclude our discussion, that according to Rav Yehuda, for the second birthing event, it's all disregarded. The carbon's disregarded, and the count also is disregarded. The Gemara pushes back on this one as well. So the Gemara says that when she gave birth to a male within her melos of a female, meaning there is a possibility, according to the Chachamim, to construct a scenario where you can have a birthing event, one within another. Now, if it's girl, 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 obviously you can't have one within another, because 80 days of the next birthing event obviously is going to go beyond the 80 days of the previous birthing event, obviously. But it is possible in the following circumstance, where you had a girl, she had a girl, so that now demands an 80-day count, and within that, you can have the zachar, you can have the male, because the male is 40 days. 40 days is contained within 80. The Gemara says that not so fast, right? I gave out the numbers as if this is so simple. It's not that simple. So shlamim yeh dekadma, v'adkan debasra lo shlamim. The Gemara says, wait one second. Let's think this through. She just gave birth to a girl. So now she has the 80-day count. So now let's go from that point going forward. Can she conceive immediately? Obviously not. In other words, again, there's 2 weeks where she's usher to her husband. Okay, so her first opportunity of conception would be on day 15. And let's say she gives birth to a boy. Again, I say birth, by the way, I mean a miscarriage. And let's say she miscarries a boy. But in order for that miscarriage to be halakhically legal, it has to be 40 days post-conception. Anything before that is just maya ba'alma. So now so far it's been 15 days plus another 40 days. We're already at 55 days. And even if she had a boy, so 55 plus 40, that's 95. That's after the malos. So even if you're telling me that it's the boy within a girl, the numbers still don't work out. The Gemara acknowledges that that is a good point. It's not only a good point, it's correct. It's factually correct. So the Gemara says the Harabbanon Vlacheni Manu El Mishkachal Al Rabbanon Bioledes Taomim. So the Gemara says, okay. So according to the Chachamim, here's how you can fit in one malos within another malos. It's a little tricky, but it works. And that is Bioledes Taomim. She was carrying multiples, and Nekeva Kadmaisa. The first one that came out was a girl. Now again, the Gemara's assumption is that multiples can be actually born significantly staggered from one from the other. So she gave birth to the girl on first, and then v'zachar basra ukegon de yildete l'zachar basra be'esrim liyuma tahara. So and the boy came out 20 days later. So now the birth of the boy will fit in to the malos of the girl under these circumstances. Debay minke leishivat yumetuma deleida. And now she would have to count the 7 days of Tumas Leda. And I'm skipping the next two words. V'hachikamer yachol hecha deleda to omim nekeva mikar v'zachal v'sof Tafsik Tumah Deleida b'mitzah v'nimsa v'nimlei shishim v'shisha v'shishim v'fuzarim. So now the Gemara is now the working with the Havamina that because now her second birth is going to totally fit into the Melos of her first, and it's not going to go beyond. So maybe what we should do is break in the counting of the first. That's the Havamina. So that's what we're learning from the word yom, and that no. Once I'm counting the first, I must maintain consecutively the count of the first and not break it for the second. Now, admittedly, that too was complicated, as the Gemara basically deflected the proof because we could say that the Brice is going like the Chachamim, albeit in a most unusual circumstance. Tashma, this is now going to be a third attempt. And again, the question is going to still be maintained to be the same question. Rav Yehuda, who says that a birthing event during a malos is disregarded regarding the karbanos, is it also going to be disregarded regarding the count? We have now unsuccessfully proven it from the brisa regarding Pesach, from the brisa regarding counting 60 consecutive days, where the Torah tells us it has to be Ritzufim. That brisa doesn't have to be going like Rav Yehuda. It could be going like the Chachamim. And so here we go. Our third proof, and here it will be definitive. And so will the fourth proof as well. Once the third proof is definitive, we don't need a fourth proof, but we got it. It's coming up. Amar Rabbi Tashma Shloshim Yom. This is now same Parsha. The Torah's description of a woman who's given birth in the beginning of Parsha Tzazria. And the Torah says 30 days. Yacho Ben Ritzufim Ben Mufuzarim. Consecutive, maybe staggered. Tamalamar Yom Ma Yom Ma Yom Kula Ritzuf Av Shloshim Ritzufim. And so the 30 days are going to have to be consecutive. Have to be consecutive. Ha, money. Money. Ha, ilay merabanan umiyisle rabanan mufuzarim ha merabanan levlacheni manya. According to the Chachamim, again, we know what happens according to the Chachamim. You have a birthing event during a malos. You just erase the previous count, and you work from this point going forward. And here we're talking about a 30-day window. There is literally no possible conceivable way to have another birthing event within 30 days. It's impossible, like we described already. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says the only possible author of this price is Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda does allow, does disregard a birthing event during a malos. Here, when the Torah says Ritzufim, that has to be consecutive, it means not only do we disregard it regarding the karban, we're also going to disregard it regarding the count as well. Done. End of discussion. Well, not end of discussion, but that proof was really good. And so is this coming. So is this proof coming up? V'odam Rav Ashi Tashma v'sheshi yamim yachol bein ritzufim bein mefuzarim tamalamer shishim. Ashishim kulam ritzufim, af shisha kulam ritzufim. It's the same exact point, but we're using the number six. The number six, that's even more clear. Money. Ilem rabban miyisrael rabban mufuzarim ham rabban levlad sheni manya elalav Rabbi Yehuda yishma mina chomer yisrael kule leisle shma mina. So the Gemara says that it is going like the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to count consecutively, meaning that a birthing event that occurs during is not going to be regarded at all. Not for karban, not for counting. We can move on now. The Gemara has concluded. So that was a really long and somewhat complicated discussion within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, that a birthing event during a malos is going to be discounted lagabi the karban. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. And after a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, we also just learned together that it disregards it regarding the counting as well. Period. We now move on. We are coming up to the next Mishnah. Elam avin karban olav yored. There are times where a karban is an adjustable karban, meaning a karban chatas is going to be a female goat or a female sheep, and that's it. Someone who is obligated to bring a karban chatas must pay out of pocket money to be able to buy either a sheep or a goat, and there is no discounts and there is no scholarship. However, when it comes to five different averas, the Torah allows for adjustable karban based on his economic status. The larger question, which is a wonderful question, is that why for these particular five is there going to be adjustments that are made based on his finances, as opposed to every other avera where there is no adjustments? So it's a wonderful larger question. It certainly is a worthwhile endeavor to try to understand why these particular five. I could share some thoughts, but I'm not going to share them now because we are really behind. The Elu Mivin Carbon Oliviore, for these five people, the carbon chatas is going to be an adjustable one. Al Shmuz Kol, So number one, Shmias Kol. Shmias Kol, you are asked to testify because you actually saw the event. You actually are a witness. But when you get the subpoena, you basically look at them and say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any testimony. And you swear to that effect. Under those circumstances, you have to, once you come clean, you must bring a carbon. The carbon's an olav yored. Parenthetically, by the way, that's not parenthetical. All these carbonos are at the end of Parshas Vayikra. It is in Perikei. Not all of them, sorry. These three that we're going to be describing right now are in Perikei. Parshas Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra. Anyway, that's Shmias Kol. Number two, Abitus Vasayim. If a person makes a Shur Sheker, and after having made the Shur Sheker, so then he would like to have kapara for that which he did. Again, carbon olav yored. And finally, al tumas, not finally, but of these three, tumas mikdash vekadasham. He goes into the base of mikdash while being tame. So, and he does so b'shogeg, so he brings a carbon, and the carbon is going to be an adjustable carbon, depending on his economics. Number four, yoledes, a woman after having given birth. So she too, this is now in Parshas Tazria, she too is going to be able to bring an adjustable carbon based on her finances. And finally, the mitzora that is in Parshas Mitzora, easy to remember. So there too, our mitzora can bring an adjustable carbon. It is an adjustable carbon based on his finances. Okay, so five different, now I'm going to say averas, by the way. They're not averas, meaning the yoledes clearly is not an avera. She gave birth. But still, the Torah demands that she brings carbonos. And the carbon can be adjusted to her finances. So, but in these five carbon circumstances, so the carbon is adjustable. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara now is going quarter brisa. This brisa is just really making observations. Observations in terms of, we swap out in these five circumstances. The swap is not always the same swap out. And you'll see what I mean. Yesh maybe Vidal's Vashiras. Some are adjustable two levels. Yesh may be bedalos, v'yesh may be bedalidalos. Some of them are just impoverished. Some of them are really impoverished. So, and the Gemara is going to explain what all these statements mean. For example, yoledes may be bedalos v'ashiras. As far as a woman who gave birth is concerned, so yes, it's true that there is going to be an adjustment for the woman, but only on one of the two karbanos. Meaning, a woman after having given birth has to bring a chatos and an ola. Okay, that part's a given. In terms of adjustment, only one of those carbonos is going to turn from an animal into a bird. But the other one, however, is going to maintain an animal. Beginning of Parshas Tazria, Torah says, the imlo simsa yada de se, lacha shtei sarim ushne b'nei yona, echel olav echel achatos, v'chiper olav akoin v'tahera. Sorry, I just confused myself. Sorry. The first point is regarding they both swap out to birds. It's by the mitzora that only one of them swap out for birds, or I should say better, of the three carbonos of the mitzora, two of the three swap out for birds. Let's do this again. I'm sorry, I just confused myself. Tanu Rabbanan, yesh may be bedalos v'ashiras, v'yesh may be bedalos, v'yesh may be bedalidalos. Yoledes may be bedalos v'ashiras. As far as the yoledes is concerned, there are two levels. Either she's going to bring a pair of animals or a pair of birds. Mitzora may be bedalos. As far as the mitzora is concerned, so they're bringing dalos. And shmias kol, bitus v'aslem v'tumas mikdash v'kadasha, may be bedalos v'dalidalos. Now, for the three mentioned in Vayikra, there are actually three levels. Either animals or birds, or there's even a level lower than that, and that is just a mincha offering. We're going to actually go over in just a moment what kind of discounted break you get when instead of animals, it's birds. Instead of birds, it's a mincha. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Tanya Yidach, the Gemara quotes another brisa, yesh may be echad tachas echad, yesh may be shnaim tachas shnaim, yesh may be shnaim tachas echad, yesh may be echad tachas shnaim. In terms of a substitution, here was the point that I jumped ahead of myself earlier, in terms of swapping out. Meaning sometimes it's one animal which is replaced with two birds. And sometimes it's two for one. And we're going to go through each one of the circumstances. Mikana talami la'asir sa'efa bepruta. And the Braisa ends off with a statement which is that our mincha that is going to be offered bedale dalus, that is the lowest level carbon financially, so it is only going to cost a single pruta. and the numbers are going to be explained momentarily. You'll let us be via achas tachas achas, pray to achas va'of tachas keves, tachas keves. As far as our Yoledis is concerned, so it's a one-to-one swap out. Meaning instead of an animal, it's a bird. Instead of two animals, it's two birds. Okay, so it's a one-to-one swap out. Mitzorah shtei predim tachas shnei kvasim. In terms of a mitzorah, it's going to be two birds swapping out for the two kvasim. A mitzorah brings three karbanos, chatas, ashem, and ola. And on the chatas and ola, if he can't afford it or she can't afford it, so the chatas and ola will be swapped out animals for birds. The ashem still remains an animal. Shmias kol ubitus vasim v'tumas mikdash v'kadoshav mivin beis predim tachas kivsa achas. Now for our carbon ola v'yarid at the end of Parshas Vayikra, so there, for the three averas, it's going to be either one animal, or if not one animal, two birds. So there we're swapping out two birds for one animal. But as we're going to learn together momentarily, the two birds are still significantly cheaper than that of the one animal. Umivim bedali dalos ashirus, I'm sorry, asirus haifa tachashtei predim. And where do we get the swap out of one for two? So if she's dropping down from the birds to the mincha, that means that she was going to bring two birds, but because she's in the really impoverished area, so therefore she brings one mincha. So that's where we see a swap out of one for two. So basically we can go over every format of one for one, two for two, two for one, and one for two. Ketani mikana talami lasir sa'efa shi'i bepruta, minalam. And how do I know that the asir sa'efa comes out to be one pruta? So the Gemara says, let's do the math together. Hamar hare alai kisela, sorry, hare alai bisela lemizbeach. Let's say a person says that I'm going to be bringing an animal equivalent to a sela. So maybe kevis. Your standard sheep is going to be costing a sela. She endeavor krav bisela ella kevis. Mimai. How do I know that the kevis is going to be one sela? Midam rechmana el asham bekesef shkalim. The only place in the Torah where the Torah actually gives us a denomination for a karban, the value of a karban, is going to be by the ram of the karban asham. The Torah says it has to be kesef shkalim. It has to be multiple shkalim. Of course, multiple always is understood as two. So, our ram is going to be costing two shkalim. Michlal de keves ben shana, keves ben shana, bisela. And that means that the keves is going to be one sela. Midichtiv keves ben shnaso. The math of the Gemara actually is pretty straightforward. Maybe you and I would say it's simplistic, but it is obviously a ratio to work with. If the IO, the two-year-old, right, the two-year-old male sheep, otherwise known as a ram, if the IO is going to be costing two selaim, so then the one-year-old is going to be one sela. I know it's not, you know, it's not precision, but it is a ratio, and it does work. So that means the sheep is one sela. V'tnan amdu kinem bo bayom berivasayim. Now remember what we learned not so long ago? The prices of birds skyrocketed. And to that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel addressed the problem, and he said, no problem at all, he manipulated the market. And I do not mean that with any negative connotation whatsoever. Meaning, he did so that women would be able to afford and bring their kabanos. And without going into the details of how he did it to the point where a pair of birds ended up costing a quarter of a dinar. Now, let's consider. We just learned that a standard cost of a sheep is a sela. We just learned together that the pair of birds go at a quarter of a dinar. Now, a sela is made up of a sela is made up of four dinar. So if we're looking now at a pair of birds being a quarter of that dinar, so now we're at 1/16th of the price of a kevis. So now we have just seen together that a pair of birds is 1/16th of the kevis. Right now we're assuming a pair. Right now. Okay. Umid chas rechmana. Right, I open myself to the opportunity of changing that position. But I know, I happen to be, I know the Gemara is going to change its position. Umid chas rechmana Allah, the dalos lamehave chad mishis asar ba'ashiros. Chas rechmana Allah, the dali dalos lamehave chad mishis asar ba'dalos. So the Gemara says, now, if we're seeing that the Torah is going to be giving a significant discount, a 1/16th discount, going from the animal to the pair of birds, so then we're just going to work with the same ratio. Going from a pair of birds down to the mincha offering also has to be a 1/16th. Im kein, dalos kama. So the Gemara says, okay, now let's actually plug it in. We know the ratio, let's plug it in, let's see what we're going to get. Now, in terms of where we want to end up, we know where we want to end up. We want to end up the mincha being a pruta. Why? Because that's what the Brisa said. But the math is not going to work out, and that's where we're going to stumble a couple of times in the Gemara, because the math is just simply not going to work out. Because im kein dalus kama havia riv'a v'kama prita b'riv'a arba'im v'tamya priti. The Gemara says, how many prutas exist in a quarter of a dinar? So 48. 48 prutas in a quarter of a dinar. So now, what's the 16th of 48? 3. So that means to say that our mincha is now going to be 3 prutas. Now, on one hand, that's great. That's really cheap. On the other hand, it's not where we wanted to end up. We didn't want to end up with 3 prutas. We wanted to end up with 1 pruta. So, chad mishisa sar kama have de dalas talsa prite. Diktani, I'm sorry, vikitani mikana talami lasir sa'efa bepruta. So the Gemara says, v'amai pruta amart, asir sa'efa dali dalasu v'amart chad mishisrei de dalasu de chashvina nun prite havyan. So the Gemara said, I'm sorry, de gimel prite havyan. So the Gemara is just bothered by, look, we just did the calculations. We know that a pair of birds is a 16th of an animal. We're assuming that the mincha is going to be a 16th of the pair of birds. Our starting number for the animals is a sella. Then we're going to go down a 16th for the pair of birds. So that is a quarter of a dinar. And if we're going to go a 16th down from there, in other words, a quarter of a dinar is 48 prutos, a 16th of that is going to be 3 prutos. Now again, it's cheap, but that's not where we want to end up with. So the Gemara says, okay, here's what we're going to say. Tana miyoletis yalif demasya preda achas. So the Gemara says, okay, but we're talking about the Yoledis. Yoledis actually is going to be offering a single bird. Because for the Yoledis, the Yoledis, it is going to be a substitution of a bird for an animal. So in other words, we're not going from animal to 2 birds. We're going from animal to 1 bird. So that Gemara says, now that we're doing that, so now it's not a 16th. It's actually going to be double that. Double of a 16th is going to be 132, 1 over 32. So, achas tachas kevis, to have a chad mitalsim etrin. So that's going to be 1 over 32, the kevis. The ad kan, dali dalas kamahave, chad mishisa sabidalas. So the Gemara now is assuming, so here's the drop off. From the animal to 1 bird, so that's going to be not a quarter of a dinar, but rather an eighth of a dinar. It's half. Now the Gemara says, that and we're going to drop from an eighth of a dinar. Now, an eighth of a dinar is going to be, it's going to be not 48 prutas, but rather it's going to be 24 prutas. And now the Gemara is assuming, okay, now take a 16th of that. Because again, going from animals to a pair of birds is 1 over 16. Take a 16th of that. So a 16th of 1, 1/16 of 24 is not 3, it's 1.5. So the Gemara says, okay, it's better, but we're not there yet. So the mehecha yalav mikavis va'ayal ad kan berputa pagave. And now the Gemara makes exactly that point. That's still 1.5. So the Gemara says, amarava kula milsa miyo lettuce yalav ve'achi kamar midechas rachman ala dedalasa mehave chametalsam etrein v'ashiris umayhi yo lettuce hachi chas rachman ala dedalidalasa mehave chad min talsam etrein bedalos. So the Gemara says, okay, the numbers, they're going to work. Because here's what we're going to do. We're going to go from an animal, not to 2 birds, but to 1 bird. An animal to 1 bird, that's a 16th. I'm sorry. An animal to 2 birds is a 16th. An animal to 1 bird, that's 132, like we already said. But then what we're going to assume is that's the ratio. Now what we're going to do is that we're going to go from that 1 bird down to a mincha offering. So that 1 bird is 24 prutas. So now we're going to divide that 24 by the number 32. So now we're going to end up with 1 pruta. Now, for those of you who are following and listening carefully, my math, that was not good math. So, right, it was right. So, you take 24 and you divide it by 32, you're ending up with less than a pruta. In fact, it's going to be 3/4 of a pruta. So, the Gemara says, Ihachi, so, riva de pruta hava. It is a quarter less than a pruta, meaning 3/4. So, Hachinami, the Gemara says, you know what? Let's stick with these numbers. These numbers are good. In other words, because what we did now with these numbers is that we ended up with a mincha that's just about a pruta. Admittedly, right, rounded up. Admittedly, it's a little bit less, but it's good. Ela delav orichara leisui pachus mi pruta lamakam. But now, think about it, where the discount is so deep. In other words, if it was an animal that was brought, a sella. If it was 2 birds being brought, so that is a quarter of a dinar. And if it's 1 bird, it's going to be an eighth of a dinar. And now it's true that if I'm working with the ratios and it's 1 over 32 going from 1 bird down to the mincha, it's true that it comes out to even less than a pruta. but not respectful. And so therefore, we're going to be bringing the mincha from a full pruta. You got to really shell out for that mincha. We continue now in the Mishnah. We are starting from the bottom of the Amud, and we're opening up the topic to Shivcha Charufa. Shivcha Charufa, we'll be spending the rest of the daf today discussing Shivcha Charufa. If you have to go, totally understand. But we have an opportunity now to catch up. Let's take advantage of that opportunity. Shivcha Charufa is a most unusual halacha in that it is a form of adultery. We cannot talk in these terms in any other context, only in this context. It's a form of adultery in which it is not going to be actual or bona fide adultery, which, of course, if done b'mezid, is subject to capital punishment. And if done b'shogeg, you will be bringing a carbon chatas. Hard to ascertain what exactly shogeg means under those circumstances. But okay. And it's, but nevertheless, and if there are no edim, so then it's an iser karis. Okay, fine. That's nilf. Over here, the Torah introduces us to a topic in which a man has relations with a woman who is connected to a man, but it's not bona fide marriage. First, let's see the psukim together. The psukim are going to be found in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yotes, and it is, we'll start with Pasuk Chaf. V'ish ki ishkav es isha shivcha zera. If a man has relations with a woman, v'hi shivcha necharefes la'ish. Now, she is to another man. V'havdelo niftasa, but she's not redeemed. O chupasa lo nitan la, she was not given a letter of emancipation. Bikoris tiyeh, so we'll investigate. Lo yumsu ki lo chupasa. Now, he's not going to die because she was not redeemed. She was not freed. So, clearly in the context of the psukim, who is he having relations with? She is a shivcha kananis. Clearly. Because we're talking about emancipation. Now, what does it mean that she is somewhat of a married woman? So stay tuned because we're going to clarify that point in just a moment. So, okay, fine. So he had relations with a somewhat married shivcha kananis. What's the consequence? The Torah says, Ve'evitz ha-shamo la-shem al-pesach al-amoid el-asham. So he brings a carbon asham. Now these psukim should bring familiar because just recently in the Gemara we brought up these psukim because we noted one of the chidushim of the Shivcha Charufa is that she is that even if it's multiple isurim it's still only going to be one carbon. That's the psukim that we had right over here. The Gemara now is going to note a number of things. First of all, it'd be lovely if we defined what exactly just happened over here. In other words, we know that a Jewish man, had relations with a shivcha charufa. That's the term we're going to use to describe her from this point going forward. And we know that to a certain degree, she was assigned to another man. So it's kind of like adultery. But at the same time, however, he's not put to death. She's not put to death. It's a carbon. And also, we learned earlier, we're going to repeat again right now, even if it's b'mezid, it's still going to be carbon. Another notable chiddush in the parsha of shivcha charufa. With that stated, we're going to now open up with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to teach us some of the basic halachas regarding Shivcha Charufa.
Are you saying that it was consensual?
Let's hold off. In other words, we're too early in the discussion to really... The Gemara is going to roll out information. Let's just first see the information in the Gemara. Ma bein Shivcha labein kol ha'arayah. So this parsha of Shivcha Charufa is different than your standard Arayas Avera. Many differences. The Gemara is going to note the Mishnah. Is going to note the many differences. Shloshivs alahem lo beonish v'lo bekarbon. They are not equivalent, not for punishment, not for carbon. Shekol arayis bechatas, because when it comes to arayis, if done b'shogeg, it's a carbon chatas. V'shivcha be'asham. And meanwhile, for the shivcha charufa, the carbon's not a carbon chatas, but rather it's going to be carbon asham, like we just went through. Kol arayos, echad, we're going to skip the parentheses. Echad ish ve'echad isha shavin. B'makos uve'karbon. When it comes to all the other rayos, so the man and the woman that are involved in the act, obviously a rayos requires two. Okay, two to tango. Not the right time for the cliche. Let's move along. They're going to be equivalent for makos and carbon. Meaning, if he's obligated in makos, that means she is as well. If he's obligated in carbon, she is as well. However, v'shivcha lo hishva lo ha'ish li'isha b'makos v'lo hishva isha li'ish b'karbon. However, by the shivcha charufa, there actually are different punishments assigned for the man and woman involved in this act. For the man, carbon. For the woman, makos. How do we know that? The Gemara is going to establish how we know that based on Pesukim. Kol ha-raisa sabahemes ha-ma'arek ha-gomer. Now, when it comes to all other rayos, so partial penetration is considered an act of bia. But that's not true by shifcha charufa. Shifcha charufa, it has to be full penetration. V'chayva kol bia u-bia. And also, by all other arayos, every repeated act of arayos is going to generate a new chiyuv. However, when it comes to shifcha charufa, as we already learned, but the Mishnah is reviewing for us, that the multiple acts still can be wrapped up in one carbon. Zechomer hichmir b'shifcha. Now, in terms of chomers of the shifcha charufa, sha'asa ba'as ha-mezik ha-shogeg. The mezik is going to be treated like shogeg, in that he's going to require carbon. It's kind of funny. The Mishnah calls that a chumra, right? A stringency, right? I know you could put a positive spin on it. Like, in other words, even though he did a bemezid, he has an opportunity to bring a carbon asham, right? And he gets kapara. So I know you could put a positive spin on it, but the point the Gemara is making in terms of just simply looking at his chumra, he's got to now reach into his pocket and take out the money in order to buy a carbon asham. Ezu shivcha kol shechetzia shivcha v'chetzia bascharim. Now, and now that we spent a lot of time talking about the halachas of the shivcha charufa, the question, of course, itself begs. What is a shivcha charufa? Who is she? Meaning that she's having relations with a man and she's kind of married and everything we just described. So, machlokus amongst the tanayim. So, kol shechetzia shivcha v'chetzia bascharin. So, if she is half shivcha, half bascharin. Now, this is a case that's discussed many times throughout the Gemara. It requires a story. The story is actually pretty simple. In other words, there was a shivcha kananis who was owned in partnership by two people, and one of them released her, and so that means released his shares of her, and the other one retained her. So now she is half. She is chetzia shivcha chetzia bascharin. Shenemar, now we read that into the psukim. V'havdei lo niftasa div Rabbi Yehuda. Now the girsa we should have is Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda now, the corrected girsa is Rabbi Akiva. And we'll see that from the Gemara as well. So that means to say that now, according to Rabbi Akiva, the circumstance in which all the consequences we just described is talking about where she is, Chatzi Bascharin, Chatzi Shivcha Kananis. So extraordinarily limited circumstances of the application of all these halachas we just learned. Rabbi Shmuel Amar Zuhi Shivcha, Vadais. Rabbi Shmuel says, simple. No, she's a Shivcha. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Kol Arayos Mefurashos Vishir Ein Lanu Ela Chetzi Shefcha Vechetzi Bascharin. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that when it comes to all other rayos, so Mefurashos, clearly delineated and articulated, meaning that they are emancipated women or Jewish women. When it comes to the Shivcha Charufa, our discussion, she is half Chetzi Shivcha Chetzi Bascharin. Now the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov seems to be identical to the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. And what then is the difference between Rabbi Kim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, when meanwhile they're making the exact same point? The Gemara is going to ask that question. Now, in terms of where a man has relations with our Shivcha Charufa, who is again, she's with another man, she's assigned with another man. And by the way, we haven't even identified who that other man is, meaning who she married to. But if another man is with her, so what do we say? She, as a result of the act, is going to get Malkus. And he's going to bring a carbon. But in other words, he's not getting Malkus and she doesn't bring a carbon. So the Gemara wants to know, how do we see that in the Pesukim? So Bikoris Tihiyah, so the Bikoris is a reference to Malkus for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. And of course, the word Tihiyah is going on her. So that means that she's going to get the Bikoris, otherwise known as Malkus. Yachol shneim lokin. Well, maybe they're both going to get Malkus. Tamar lomer tiyeh. He loka vihu eino loka. She's going to get the Malkus, not he, because the Torah specifically says tiyeh. Uminayin de hadein bikaris lishin de Malkusu. How do I know that bikaris is in fact Malkus? Wonderful question. The Gemara answers. Am Rabbi Yitzchak tehei bikrai. So the Gemara says, do you know that when you get Malkus? Do you know? Like, if you know, it hasn't happened in a while. But once upon a time, when Malkus was administered, so we learned this back in the Mishnayos in Malkus in the third Perek. So when the Malkus were administered, Psukim would be read. Which Psukim would be read? So open for a debate, but presumably the easiest pshat is the Psukim that you violated and the reason why you're getting Malkus. So the point is really getting hammered home that don't do that again. So the Bikrai Kedetanya Gadol Hadayan Mikra. And we're going over the Mishnah and Malkus together. in terms of the actual procedure, the protocol of Malchus. So of the Dayanim, so the venerated one, so he's going to be reading the Psukim. And Sheni Mone, and the second one is going to be counting, making sure that the recipient of the Malchus is getting the proper number. And Shlishi Omer Hikau. And the third one actually gives instructions. Okay, now hit. Okay, sounds like a lot of administration. But right. But obviously it's a basin of three. Okay. Rav Ashi Amar Bibikur Tiya. Rav Ashi says that the word bikoris means malchus. He agrees. He just has a slightly different derivation. It comes from the word bikur, which means investigation. What are we investigating for malchus? It's actually very simple. What we're investigating is how much can the man or woman take. So we do an appraisal of how much he could take before giving it to him. Now, whatever the number is, it has to be divisible by 3. So the maximum number is 39. So from there, any number that he can handle has to be a number divisible by 3. 36, 33, et cetera, et cetera. And let's say it comes out that the appraisal came in at 34. So then he gets a break. He's only going to get 33. Okay. Anyway, that's Bikoris. That's the investigation. It's based on the appraisal. Okay, so, but we've got it now. In the case of Shivcha Charufa, she's going to get Malchus. We know it because of Tiya, and we know Malchus because of the word Bikoris. Ten Rabbanan Bizman Sha Ish Elokei Ish Mevi Karban. Eina Ish Elokei Eina Ish Mevi Karban. Now, even though the punishments are different, but their two punishments are going to go hand in hand. When she gets Malchus, he brings the Karban Asham. If she's not going to get Malchus, he's not going to bring a Karban Asham. Rashi gives a simple example. Let's say that she was a minor. So if she was a minor, she's not going to get Malchus. So under those circumstances, he's not going to bring a Karban. Minalan, Amarava Dichtiv, V'ish Ki Yishkav Etzisha Shechvat Zera, V'hish Shivcha Nechrefes La'ish, V'avdei Lo Nivdasa Ochu Pasa Lo Nitan La. That's the pasuk we went through the pasukim in the beginning. Mechti. Ad hacha b'ish kamishtai kra. So the Torah very clearly contextually is talking about the man. Vehevi is ashamol Hashem. Because it says, and he's going to bring the Karban Hashem. Ulevesov lichtov b'koros tiyeh. Amai kasav rachmana b'resha b'koros tiyeh. Ulevesov kasav vehevi es ashamol Hashem. In terms of the sequencing and the ordering of the pasukim, so we go to her, and then we go back to him. So why do we go him, to her, back to him? Hachikamer in bikaros tiye he vehevi es hashamol Hashem v'im lo tiye bikaros lo yevi hu es hashamol. So what the Torah is doing by going back and forth between him, back to her, back to him, is to tell us that their fates are linked together. Their punishments are linked together. In a circumstance where she's going to get Malchus, he's going to bring the Karban. But if she doesn't get Malchus, he's not going to bring a Karban. And we could also go vice versa. If he's not bringing a Karban, she's not going to be getting Malchus. Ema. The Gemara now wants to entertain the following idea. Maybe, good, he's not going to get Malchus, we learned that based on the Pesukim. But maybe she'll get Malchus and she'll bring a Karban. The Gemara says, no, Vehevius Hashem Ola Hashem Ksiv. No, because the Torah says he brings the Karban Hashem. It's pretty clear in the Pesukim that only he brings the Karban Hashem. Amar Rav Yitzchak Lola Meinu Chayv Ela Al Shivcha Be'ula. Another halacha regarding Shivcha Charufa. And that is that the Onshim are only under the circumstance where she already previously was with another man, meaning she cannot be a basula. I mean, she could be, but then there wouldn't be the onshim that we just described, not the malchus for her and not the ashim for him. Shenemar v'hi shivcha necherefes le'ish. And we know that because the word charufa, which by the way, up until now, has gone unexplained, but that's changing now. We're going to explain the word charufa. This charufa means that she was already with another man. How do we know that that is the etymology of the word charufa, my mashma, dahai necherefes lishna dishenuyahu. The word charufa, that means that she underwent a change, meaning she's no longer a virgin. So dechsev, the pasuk says, vatishtach alav harifos. They ground out the wheat. So you see the word harifos, which is similar to the word charufa, hey and ches. We always find them in Bederech HaDrush to be interchangeable letters. And so therefore, harifos is the same as charufa, which means underwent a change. Another pasuk that speaks to the same idea, that the word harifos is referring to crushed wheat, and the idea being that the charufa is similar, meaning that she was with a man.
Al
As long as we're talking about the Shivcha Charufa, now is a great time to talk about Sefer Ezra, specifically the 10th Perek, in which a lot of the people who made Aliyah together with Ezra, not the firmest of people, i.e., they were with non-Jewish women. So, and then the Torah, the Navi over there describes how they separated from their non-Jewish women and they brought a Karban Hashem. It's a funny pasuk. But now in our context, we're going to make perfect sense of it. What are they doing bringing the Karban Hashem? What they're doing is that they are, because it wasn't that they were stam married to a non-Jewish woman. It means that they were violating the Isser of Shivcha Charufa, which requires a man to bring a Karban Hashem. I'm Rav Chista Malami Shikulan Shivcha Charufa's Balo. They were having relations with Shivcha Charufa. Okay. Now, right, wonderful time to now make sense of that pasuk in Ezra. Ezuhu Shivcha. Let us get to the next Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan. V'havdei yachol kula tamar lomar lo niftasa. Yachol lo niftasa tamar lomar v'havdei. The Torah, when describing our Shivcha Charufa, is vacillating between she's redeemed, she's not redeemed. Where are we? Hakeitzan, peduya, veina peduya. Chesi Shivcha, chesi bascharin. Yeah, that's exactly where we are. In the middle of being redeemed and not redeemed. Chasi Shivcha, chasi bascharin. Which, by the way, accords with the opinion of Rabbi Kiva we saw in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov. Umaresesus la'evet ivri, div Rabbi Kiva. And also on top of that, so it's not enough that she's a half eved, I'm sorry, half shivcha kananis, half bascharin, but also she's with an eved ivri. Now here's a detail that I should have mentioned from the beginning of the entire sugya. Like I said, it is a form of adultery. It's a form of adultery because she's with a man. She has a quasi husband. Now the quasi husband over here is an eved ivri. Let's go over the relationship between an eved ivri and shivcha kananis. Under certain circumstances, the Torah tells us this in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. If a Jew becomes an Eved Ivri, so for all intents and purposes, for all halacha, he's a Jew. His status of becoming an Eved Ivri does not change his Jewish status whatsoever. However, with that stated, there is an allowance in that an Eved Ivri could be paired with a Shivcha Kananis. Now, the children they produce are going to belong to her, or better stated, going to belong to the master. So the children are not his. But still, the Torah gives an allowance for such a union. Even though, under normal circumstances, a Jewish man cannot be with a Shivcha Kananis. That is an Isser in the Torah. But still, once you become an Eved Ivri, that allowance is given. So, is it a marriage in the formal sense? The answer, of course, is no. But it is a recognized union of the Torah. As such, that's the parsha of Shivcha Charufa. So when you have this Shivcha Kananis, who is Necharefes Le'ish, and the Ish over here, according to Rabbi Kiva, is an Eved Ivri, so now if another man has relations with her, so that is now a violation of Shivcha Charufa. Good. I could have mentioned that at the beginning. Okay, but the Gemara now makes that point super clear. Sorry, I lost my spot. I'm back. Divrei Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, B'Shivcha Kananis, HaKasa Medaber. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, it is she's a full Shivcha Kananus, which we already saw back in the Mishnah. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. Umaresus Levit Ivri. And again, same story, where she is, a union was created between her and the Evid Ivri. Imke matam lamar v'avdelo nivdasa. Now, what are we going to do with the language of the Pasuk? Rabbi Shmuel says it's very simple. Dibur Torah, Kol Hashem Bnei Adam. It's just a phrase, meaning havdelo nivdasa means not she's redeemed, she's not redeemed. It's like an expression. And redeemed? No, she's not redeemed. It's just the Torah speaks the way you and I speak. Rabbi El Azar ben Azariah Amar Kol Arayshim Mifereshes B'Torah. Sorry, Kol Arayshim Mifereshes Lanu Mishuyar Lanu Chesed Shifu Chesed Baschoren Umoresus LeEved Ivri. Rabbi El Azar ben Azariah says exactly what Rabbi Kiva said. Half Eved, half Shifu Kananis, half Baschoren. And the Acherim, the position of the Acherim, is that she is a full-fledged Shivcha Kananis. Umaresus la'evet Kanani. Here the Acherim do have a departure from the previous position. A full Shivcha Kananis who is married to an Evet Kanani. Oh, so again, it is a union, but not the union that we described earlier where she is married to an Evet Ivri. Now, Rabbi Shmuel Bishlam of Avdelo Nivdasik Diktani Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam. Now, as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, we already addressed how to understand the psukim, i.e., Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam. Ela Diktani Mereses Levit Ivri Minalan. Where in the psukim? We read the psukim at the beginning of the whole sugya. Where in the psukim is Evid Ivri introduced? It's not. Every divrei is not mentioned. How do I know? Dechsev ki lo chupasa mechal dehu chupas. By the Torah saying, oh, and you know, and she was not released. She was not freed. Meaning that in the union that she had with that other man, her man was in fact freed. I.e., he's an Eved Ivri. Because an Eved Ivri is not a slave in the classic sense, in the chattel sense. Meaning, he's a free man. Now, his freedom right now is a little bit impaired because as an Eved Ivri, he's indentured. You know, there's no chance for him to quit on the job. But still, in terms of freedom, he is a free man. So you have to read it into the psukim. It's there. She's not freed, but her man is in fact freed, i.e. Eved Ivri. Rabbi Lazman, Azar Yehain, Rabbi Akiva. Now the question, which we could have asked back in the Mishnah, but okay, we're asking it now. And that is that Rabbi Lazman, Azar is repeating the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. But why does he need to repeat it? Why do we need to see that Rabbi Lazman, Azar holds like that? So le Rabbi Shmuel Kamar. So what Rabbi Lazman, Azar is doing is, it's a response to Rabbi Shmuel. Because Rabbi Lazman Azari says to Rabbi Shmuel, generally speaking, you and I are on the same page. Meaning, I also subscribe to the idea that the Torah speaks in a language that we speak. And so therefore, sometimes the Torah is not meant to be darshaned. I'm with you on that, but not here. The Torah already says that she's not freed. That's the words kilo chupasa, chupasa from the word chofesh. She's not free. Ve'havdelo nidasa lamale. So now the words havdelo nidasa become superfluous. So and normally I'm with you. Dibra tar kolosha mani adam. But over here, it's excess language. Shema minat lahaki asa lechet yeshif echat sibaschar. So that's why over here, even though I'm normally with you, Rabbi Lazar ben Azari says Rabbi Yishmael, but I can't be with you here. Lacherim bishlama v'havdelo nidasa kasavi dibra tar kolosha mani adam. Now according to the position of Acherim, so the fact that she is a full slave, like we said, Dibratur Kol Shemini Adam, that's good. Elahada v'kanani minalan. But here, Acherim depart from the previous positions. The previous positions had her married to an Eved Ivri. And according to Acherim, she's married to an Eved Kanani. Where do you see that in the Pesukim? Amarkra ki lo chupasa im eno inyan lidida, teneo inyan lidide. The Torah says ki lo chupasa. Now ki lo chupasa, redundancy. We already know that she's a slave. How do I know that? V'avdelu niftasa. So now, kilo chupasa is a redundancy. The redundancy now is not going on her, but rather on him, her husband. And her husband is somebody who is not freed, i.e., he's a slave. Good. Okay. Let's stop. Let's stop over here.
Okay,
yeah.
According to the Kiva, if she's half free and half... So we assume that half free is Jewish, right? Okay. So doesn't that make her half Eshet Ish? So
yes.
That,
yes.
So in case he's having his, another affair with somebody else, then there should be actually full Arayah, no?
Correct. But that's exactly the point. The point is that by Kol Arayah Shebatara, so a full free woman is going to be Arayah. Over here, the fact that she half of her is still owned is going to diminish the Avera, meaning so that the punishment is not going to be a capital punishment. That's exactly the point. Because, in other words, you're just simply saying, shouldn't the half incur a capital punishment?
Right.
The Torah is saying, no, because it's only half, so therefore the avera and therefore punishment is going to be diminished just a bit.